Okay, we're moving on to a regular board meeting of April 24th. Have a roll call, please.
Chair Vasquez, Vice Chair Shaw, Treasurer Kilkenny, and Directors Geisler, Jenkins, Rath, Avila, and Russell are present. Secretary Robinson is excused.
Thank you. Non-agenda public comment?
There are none.
Ex parte communications? Item number four, potential agenda items. Okay, corporation report.
Thank you. Quick report today. In terms of briefings, staff met with the Downtown San Diego Partnership as well as the Deputy Chief Operating Officer's office. We were involved in several conferences, workshops, and community outreach events since the last board meeting. Staff attended meetings with the Diamond Business Improvement District, City Heights Area Community Planning Group. We hosted the Lunch and Learn in Logan Heights with over 60 attendees. Staff participated in the Community Development Financial Institutions Coalition Annual Conference and there met with Senator Feinstein, Senator Harris, and Speaker Pelosi's office to provide information on the CDFI. Staff also participated in the New Market Tax Credit Coalition Congressional Fly-In Day and met with Representative Peter's office and Representative Vargas' office to inform them on the New Market Tax Credit Extension Bill. There was also groundbreaking on April 12th of The Link, which is a affordable housing project in East Village that will provide 72 permit supportive housing units in 14 studios. Chair Vasquez did the speaking at that groundbreaking event. There is no team civic spotlight today, but today is administrative professional day. And I did want to highlight our admin team that provides services to the corporation, starting with Jody, who's the confidential assistant and clerk of the board. She's been with the corporation for nearly 34 years. And so extensive experience and knowledge in terms of the corporation provides great support and wanted to thank her. Betty, who is the administrative assistant for the Neighborhood Investment and Economic Development team. She's also been here for quite a while. Kimberly, who's the administrative assistant to the planning team and also provides support in our communication and outreach endeavors. And then Lisa, who is in the audience and is our administrative clerical assistant and receptionist. And she's typically the first voice that people hear on the phone as well as the first face that people see when they walk in. So join me in thanking them for all the hard work that they do provide to help this corporation. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge Jody for her help with me and stuff. I see the great work that she does, and I couldn't even try to do none of this stuff without her. All the phone calls and reminders, especially the reminders, so thanks a lot for great work. Thank you. All right, so we're moving on to the consent agenda. Director Shaw, second. Okay. Please vote.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Moving on to item number eight, Person Beach. We have
Thank you, Chair Vasquez and members of the Civic San Diego Board of Directors. I'm Bill Chopik, planner for Civic San Diego. And we have here today, we have the architects, Jonathan Sherman and Pablo Collin. And we also have the representatives, the owner developer here, Mark Schmidt and Randy Williams in the audience to answer any questions you might have. The First and Beach site is on a 32,000 square foot parcel. On the south side of Beach Street between First and Second Avenues. First Avenue is a heavily traveled one-way street, and a two-way cycle track is planned on Beach Street, soon to be installed. The site is a sloping site. It drops about 13 feet from the corner of 2nd Avenue and Beach Street to the southwest corner of the site. Applicable downtown community plan goals include a range of housing opportunities and protecting views. The Beach Street is a designated view corridor. The property is within the residential emphasis land use district, and as such, a 100% residential project is proposed here. Beach Street, a designated view corridor, and the tower respects the 15-foot building step back at a height of 50 feet. And this site, as well as most of downtown, is within the airport approach overlay zone, which provides supplemental regulations for properties surrounding the approach path to the San Diego International Airport and consistency with the airport land use compatibility plan. This project has been before Civic San Diego a couple of times. The project received previous approvals in April of 2016 and January of 2017. The 32,000 square foot site, we're achieving now 11.76 FAR and a density of 592 dwelling units per acre. It's a 39-story, 425-foot tall building with 429 dwelling units and 454 parking spaces in a podium. Just in comparison to the prior project, the last project had 364 dwelling units. We're now at 429. The parking spaces have increased. The FAR has actually gone down a little bit, but the building height remains the same. The previous project had proposed 10% low-income units. That equated to 23 off-site low-income units. The proposed project now is 5% very low-income units to achieve a density bonus, affordable housing density bonus. So this project has four FAR bonuses. The base maximum FAR is 8.0. The Eco Roof achieves a 0.11. LEED Silver achieves a 1.0 FAR bonus. The FAR payment is 0.89, and the affordable housing proposed would achieve a 1.76 FAR bonus for a total FAR of 11.76. The 5% very low income off-site affordable units qualifies this project for one incentive. The incentive that is requested is to increase the east-west tower dimension from 130 feet to 147 feet. That 147 east-west dimension includes the 4-foot projecting oriel windows. So it's really, it's 143 plus a 4-foot oriel projection. And the inclusionary housing fee would have to be paid. It would be essentially a half fee, prorated at a half of the required affordable housing, inclusionary housing fee. The affordable dwelling units can be located off-site. This is allowed under the city's ordinances. It has to be located within the same council district or within 1 mile within the community planning area. The off-site dwelling units must reflect the same bedroom mix as the project, and the off-site dwelling units must be secured prior to building permit issuance. The applicant must enter into an agreement with the San Diego Housing Commission and record a minimum 55-year deed restriction. The location of these 15 very low-income units is yet to be determined. The code does not require that be identified at this time, but would be required prior to issuance of building permits. Potentially, 1060 C Street project is a potential site for these 15 off-site very low-income units. If that were the case, because that project is all one- and two-bedroom mix, the proportions would equate to 12 one-bedroom and 3 two-bedroom, very low affordable units. This is a copy of the airport overlay zone map, C-926. The project site is highlighted in red. This project site has been cleared by the Federal Aviation Administration, providing a determination of no hazard to air navigation at 500 feet above mean sea level for the building and 540 feet AMSL for the crane, the temporary crane. The San Diego County Regional Airport Authority provided in writing a determination of consistency with the airport land use compatibility plan. So we're clear for building height with respect to the FAA and the airport land use compatibility plan. But this deviation that is proposed with the plan development permit would be an increase to the height limit of this airport overlay zone map, C-926, ranging from about 68 to 88 feet above the heights identified on this map. These are what has changed since the last project approval. The architect can go through this. There are some changes to the tower design. And also the driveway on Beach Street has been removed, which will really help with the two-way cycle track proposed on Beach Street. And also the podium wall planters have been removed, as you can see in the after rendering. So through the design review process, there were some conditions that came out of design review. One was a concern with the davit arms, so that they would be stored out of view. And the architect is prepared to address that with you. I think of particular concern is how the davit arm would reach up and over the curtain walls. Two, provide for maintenance of the wall planters. Previously proposed a scissor lift. Well, that's been resolved simply by the removal of the planters. Three, provide internal access for the ground floor units, which the architect has prepared an updated floor plan, which is on this slide, providing internal circulation and access to the core and the trash area for the ground level units, as well as the amenity space being used for a bicycle room. And then finally, we noted a 4% slope in the garage parking levels, 3, 4, and 5, and we've conditioned the project to provide for level floors in the garage facing Beach Street and second Beach Street for potential future use of the garage. With that, I'll turn it over to the architect, and he can walk you through the building.
Thank you. Jonathan Sherman of AVRP Architects. Is that better?
Should be blue.
Blue? Sorry, I'll speak a little louder. We've presented this project a few times now. Each time we've presented, we've progressed a little more with the design. As far as the major design changes, they concentrated mainly on the tower. As you can see, we previously had a larger floor plate as you went up the tower for the penthouse units. As we developed the design, we realized that having one floor plate and simplifying the design allowed us to play into a more organic form, which you can see here, where we have a sail form which wraps the facade of the building. We're still keeping in line with some of our other design philosophies that we were previously working with, like the indoor-outdoor living. So we have a lot of large balconies, which were all west-facing towards the bay. here's another view of that sail feature. And the city east facade was always a more formal design, and we've tried to keep to that, so it's a lot more orthogonal and more like the buildings that you see in the business center. The ground plane has pretty much stayed the same since we last presented. A few changes that were made were we had third and fourth floor planters. As the design progressed, we realized that these were going to be problematic to service. So when we looked at the design with and without, we realized they were no longer offering the something that was worth the extra effort for maintenance. Another major change on Beach Street was the removal of the driveway that Bill mentioned. We've replaced it with a bike room to tie in with the proposed cycle path. So that's something that we're developing now. Another thing that came up, which hasn't changed, but people were concerned, was the car park to the south and the property line facade. So we've got a couple of renderings here which show the building next door, Mix and Liquor, and the treatment of the facade, which is a combination of different concrete treatments from a vertical fluting to a more, what's the word, rough concrete look. So to highlight some of those designs, we have a video which we did present during the design review, but I will present that again. And the good thing about seeing the building in an animation is that you get more of a feel for the sail features that we really wanted to highlight, and with the connection to the water just a few blocks away. The top of the building developed, but still steps in the same way as it gets closer to the west, which provides spaces up there for the various residents. One of the questions was how would we be able to service the building? And I will have a slide in a minute that shows an example of another building that had a similar system to one that we would use. Something that came up during design review was the top of the building. And because of its prominent place as you're coming down on the five, we needed something to celebrate its place in the city. So we've started to develop a lighting concept. This is far from finished, but it's something that you can see in the rendering animation here, which really is just using a light to highlight the top. It's been done in other similar buildings in the city. We would be doing this in an enclosed channel so as not to cause any light pollution to the surrounding tenants or other buildings. So that's something we're continuing to develop. I mentioned the davit system that Bill and Brad were concerned about. 655 West Broadway has a good example of something that would be similar. This is a much taller freestanding facade than we have. We probably have about half of this, and we would still work with probably a similar system where you have a davit that reaches over but is stored away afterwards. And these would be positioned around the building with needing a height of 6 feet to be able to operate correctly. So this is not probably the exact system we would be using, but we would be using a system that benefited both to maximizing the roof space for tenants and also making it an easy maintainable building. So that's pretty much what we have changed as the design has developed. I'm sure there might be some questions.
Excuse me, Chair, if I could ask a couple of clarification questions, because some of the new information is fairly new. I just want to clarify what their intent is.
Okay.
On the scaffolding, then, that will be behind the extended glass, is what type of glass will be used there? Because I know the Broadway 655 project used a fairly transparent glass that really exposes that structure versus, like, Pacific Gate that had a more obscure glass.
That's correct. So we'll be working with something that's probably more on the obscure side to cover up the equipment and the structure. But because the amount of facade that we're reaching over is nowhere near the same as on West Broadway, mm-hmm. It won't be as obvious anyway. It'll probably develop into something that's more hiding the equipment pieces, but still allowing as much transparency for the people using the decks.
Okay.
It's something we're developing and we'll probably further develop with a consultant.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, before we go to directors, we have a speaker, Mr. Smith, in favor of the project.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Directors. Gary Smith, President of San Diego Downtown Residents Group. The evolution of this building has been interesting. In this part of the city, it's really nice to see something going on there that will finally get a lot more residents on the street. As usual, we hate parking podiums. This podium, at least at the street level, is much less distracting than others. The extension of those units to two stories does wonders. The elimination of the garage, of the driveway on Beach and the bicycle amenities room is a nice touch. Given the small footprint, I think it's doubtful they can make those floors and the podium level. So they may get one side that's level enough to be reused, but the other three sides of it will not. Which is a shame. If you look at the renderings, the outside of the podium is much better than ones we've seen previously. If you look at the sample board, it comes close to what the renderings show. All we can do is cross our fingers and hope that it comes out that way. The removal of the planters along the garage facade is probably a plus. It'll make it a lot easier to do maintenance and make sure you won't get so much discoloration on that long, long, six-story tall wall of glass and panels and supports and stuff. Parking garages are above the ground are not a good thing. But in wrapping up, this is a well, elegantly designed building on a relatively small lot. If you think about this, this is only half a block. So you can see where other developers have been shorting us in the things they bring before you. This large, elegant building on a half a block where other developers have brought us an entire block with a square donut. So please keep this in mind as we go forward. And we would urge you to approve this and get it started as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chair, if I could interrupt once again, I'm sorry. But one thing that wasn't covered in the applicant's presentation was the south property line wall. That was a design issue that had previously been discussed, and they were going to present an elevation of that for your review. So you pulling that up? Okay, thank you. Could explain what the design is for this wall because it, and the height, etc.
Yes, sure. So the current tenant is the next door is a car park and mix and liquor. So at the moment, this is almost fully exposed. This design has been in the project since probably the original design review. It's a combination of different types of stamped concrete. There's a vertical louver, a vertical fluting section, and then a rough concrete section, which will also probably be different shades of concrete to further produce that. So it's something that we believe is fits the purpose for a property line that will probably be developed in the near future, but at the same time, if left exposed, it serves as an attractive blank wall.
Okay. We have Director Russell.
Thank you. So first off, I'd want to say I really respect the work of AVRP. You've done a very beautiful job with this, and I do think that we are seeing a better version of a parking podium, which is not something we like to see at all. It's a better version of what we've seen. And so I have no critiques of the design per se. I will say that because the basis of this design is a density bonus and the affordable housing density bonus, I have a number of questions about the affordable housing components. And so first off, I guess if I'm understanding correctly, so we're being asked to give an additional bonus, but we're seeing a reduction in the total number of affordable housing units being directly provided from the previous permit?
The current FAR bonus being earned by the 5% is 1.76. I don't recall what it was the previous time for affordable housing, but there's a greater bonus given to a lesser percent of units if they're at a lower income level. So it's a whole mix. And
that's what I'm trying to understand, some of the numbers here. Because one of the things I think I would want to understand is how we arrived at the projected in-lieu fee, and where is that actually represented in the permit language? Because I see the density bonus language. I don't see how where the in-lieu fee, or is that outside of the scope of the permit itself?
And now the permit condition requires compliance with the inclusionary housing ordinance. So what the developer is required to do is go to the Housing Commission, work out the final figures and the percent. So basically, there's a base FAR, their bonus is taken off of that, and within those units, the basically half the units in that base FAR, of which are getting the bonus for, have to pay an inclusionary fee still because they're only providing 5% very low income. There's additional units that are generated, or FAR, generated from our other bonus program. All of those units also have to pay the inclusionary fee. So we estimated the amount of square footage it would be in those sets of units that have to pay the inclusionary fee, applied the current 10.82 per square foot to it, and then came up with the approximately 1.5 million of inclusionary fees in addition to the affordable units.
So if the 1.5 weren't paid, what would be the total number of offsite units required?
29.
Okay.
Well, that would be 10%. So they're proposing 5%. 10% would, because of rounding, it would be 29.
Even with that 10% or doubling the amount of offsite units, they would still have some inclusionary fee to be paid for the extra FAR bonuses being utilized in the units produced by those.
Okay.
It's a whole mixture of formula that we work with the Housing Commission staff on.
Okay, so when I look at the sizes of units, you want comparability in terms of sizes. So if the 15 units are being built off-site, that they're to be comparable to the units that they are quote-unquote replacing or in the other building. And I'm looking in the C Street project that we heard last week, or last right. 2 weeks ago, was the proposed recipient site of those units.
Right.
What I'm looking at is that those units were averaging maybe 570 square feet for an average one bedroom, whereas this project is averaging 657.
Right.
Similarly, with the two bedrooms, the C Street project had 797 square feet. The Beach Street two bedrooms were 1,300, almost twice as big. Okay. So is there a differential calculated in that in lieu fees to reflect?
Yeah, and typically for providing affordable units, either on-site or off-site, they have to be the same ratio of bedroom size. So if you have 50% one bedrooms, 50% of the affordable have to be one bedrooms, et cetera. And generally, the Housing Commission allows for 80% of the floor area to provide a comparable unit. So if it was less than 80%, the Housing Commission would say those particular units did not qualify as equitable units. So, for instance, if they did propose them in 1060 and those sizes were significantly different, they would not be allowed to be counted toward those affordable units.
Okay. Well, that's a kind of a really important question here. And I guess, you know, one of my questions is, what does it cost per unit to build in the Type 3 modified of C Street versus the Type 1 on a building like this?
I don't have those figures.
There's quite a difference. I don't have the figures on me now, but I believe as far as amenities go and the finishes of the units, they would be comparable by code.
Is there someone else who could answer that question?
Sure. Yep, the developer, Mark Smith, will be coming up to help you answer that question.
I've been building all my life, and I have no idea what the cost is going to be. The cost keeps going up and up and up. And believe me, we've been building affordable units for decades. We still will. I do feel sorry for the middle class in the city of San Diego. I mean, you can take 49 states out of the country, and there's no affordable problem. We even have employees that commute to Temecula. And, you know, believe me, I feel bad for the middle class, you know, because of the affordable. When back in the 70s, you could buy a brand new house in the San Diego in the 20s. Same thing in Las Vegas. Today, the cost in Las Vegas, you can buy a new house there for in the 400s, 300s. And in San Diego, it's terrible for the middle class.
Understood. My question was really to the cost of producing the Type 1 construction relative cost compared to the Type 3 modified.
It's probably going to be less. The difference, I honestly have no idea.
Okay. So you're at this stage without any idea of what your construction cost might be?
No idea.
Okay.
Costs keep going up. We build 12 months out of the year. Costs just keep going up and up and up. And I have no idea.
Okay, thank you. So I guess, you know, this is where my challenge comes in. I'm actually a big fan of the in-lieu fee, especially when, if you calculate it out, $130,000 per unit actually is matched by when a tax credit developer takes the in-lieu fees as a subsidy from the Housing Commission. It's about $130,000 subsidy per unit to produce another unit, because we pull down state funds, we pull down equity, we bring in developer equity. And so one of the calculations I like to do here is to figure out if the in-lieu fee is being paid, what number of units is resulting from the in-lieu fee versus what they would be required to pay. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be falling short to me. And I guess I'm a little bothered, one, by the fact that we're having someone come back with a reduced scope of affordable housing for an increased amount of housing. My calculation with the in-lieu fee is that if we were trying to replace the 15 units that are, if we're building 15, 15 are being covered by in-lieu fee, or 14, it'd be about $1.95 million in order to provide enough in-lieu fee to produce all of this. And I think this is really relevant because the density, the design of this building is relevant to the density bonuses it's receiving. And again, I'm a big fan of the in-lieu fee because it can be leveraged. It seems a bit short. I'm a little frustrated as well by the fact I had some of these questions last time that I had hoped the developer could answer. He was here but declined to answer or to identify himself. And so I'm struggling with this one a little bit, because I've approved many projects that have in-lieu fees that have had, I think part of the problem is that the off-site development is something new. And have we done that in downtown San Diego yet?
No, but we have other developers proposing it on some current projects. We did meet with Housing Commission staff last week to try and flesh some more of this information out. They're quite frankly struggling with the calculations, everything for off-site also. One question we did ask them, and they did clarify for us, so when you do take and provide the affordable units off-site, our question was, okay, in that off-site location, even though there's affordable units in there, are you still having to pay the inclusionary fee for the entire development? And they confirmed that you do still have to pay the entire fee for the other development. Even though there's affordable in it, you don't get excused from that, because that's be an excuse for the inclusionary fee for this project.
Meeting a
so you're not being able to double dip, as it were. So
I guess I have a lot of these questions here, and I'd like to see more of this worked out before we're asked to answer whether this, you know, there's a couple of findings we're supposed to make for this permit, which is that we're providing a range of housing opportunities suitable for urban environments and accommodating a diverse population, and a finding that we're ensuring supplies of housing housing for downtown employees commensurate with their means. I am not sure with the information we have that I can actually answer those questions decisively, and I'd like to move that we continue this until we have more information on the project and how the affordable housing is being met.
Was that Director Rath? Director Geisler?
Thank you. Brad, so for today, I don't see there's really an action item today, is there? It just says accept the report? Am I reading that
there
wrong?
There is a recommendation to take two actions. One, grant design review approval, and the other is to approve the permits.
Okay.
The staff recommendation. I will note that the project does comply with the ordinances for both the inclusionary housing ordinances and the density bonus provisions of the code, and that will be double checked and verified by Housing Commission, and they have to enter into an affordable housing agreement before any permits are issued for the project. So I will note that while you may seek more information, the project does comply with the ordinances as currently written and adopted by City Council.
Okay. And from a design review, we saw this at design review, and we discussed the changes, and I think that it was pretty unanimous on that committee that design changes were good, and that we like the new project, and I like what you're doing with the nighttime lights as well. So I know we have a motion on the floor, so I guess we have to vote on that before anything else can move. I won't be supporting the motion, though.
Director Shaw.
Thank you. I appreciate the aesthetic changes to the building. I really like it. I prefer it to the last version we saw. I will say that I'm disappointed the overall unit sizes have dropped dramatically. We've gone from 1 and 2 bedroom units to mostly studios and one bedrooms that are a lot smaller. Thing that I think really has put me off is none of the studios appear to have balcony space. So everything is in a small little studio, and any open space you want, you have to go down to ground level or one of the many decks, and I'm troubled by that.
Let me see if I can bring
that up. I think it's an attractive building. I do appreciate the changes that you've made to the skin of the building. Thank you.
Director Kilcaney.
Thank you. I guess let's see if I can continue where Director Russell was going. I had some of the same concerns, and I'm wondering if staff or the developer maybe just give us the narrative on why, because as a layperson, I see 23 units of affordable down to 15, but asked for more units. And I guess I'm just wondering, that doesn't seem to make sense to me as just a layperson. Is there a narrative that goes along with that that can explain why the reduction in affordable? I understand the in lieu fee, but is there a narrative to go along with that that might give us some clarity?
I think it's just a matter of the developer's preference of how to obtain the additional density in the project. He's using 4 different FAR programs in order to achieve the desired size of the building and the number of units. They were able to achieve that through the various FAR programs, including affordable, and with the inclusion of the 5% very low income units. Again, there's 2 different tables in the municipal code. One deals with very low income, the other one with low income. And you can pick and choose between those of what type of units to provide to get the density bonuses. And so while they're providing less units, overall the project has more units, but the less units are getting a certain amount of density bonus versus what they were needing in the previous project. And the overall FAR has gone down in the project, but the units have gone up because they've gone to a much smaller unit mix, more one bedrooms and smaller units than previously. We're seeing that a lot in almost every project now, where we used to see almost a 50-50 split between 1 and 2 bedrooms. Now we're seeing a 75% studio in one bedroom with 25% 2 bedroom in most of our projects. Okay. So we're seeing less diversity in the mix of units in our downtown projects.
Thank you. And if we continue this, Do you think we will get some clarity from the Housing Commission? You said they're struggling with this fee structure as well. Could we, do you anticipate clarity from them in the near future? Is this something where we can continue to the next meeting and hope we have an answer on the way back?
Well, when I speak of clarity, I think we have clarity with respect to this project on as far as what density they're entitled to, how many units they'll have to provide offsite. They'll have to provide units somewhere that are 80% of the square footage and in the same ratio as this particular project, whether that's in the 1060C project, another one of the developers' projects. They have five downtown right now that are in the pipeline stage. So they're not required to name the specific location. They have to do that before they pull any building permits, and the affordable units have to be completed within 54 months of the start of construction of the market rate units under the way the current regulations have been written.
And it sounds like maybe it was a certain building was discussed. I thought I saw in the staff report, though, that it said no building had been firmly identified. Correct.
Right. So 1060 is a potential, but if it doesn't qualify or the developer chooses to provide them, for instance, in the Little Italy projects that you've seen up on State and Hawthorne, if he chooses to provide the affordable units there, excuse me, that would qualify also under the rules, and they could place them in that location.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brad.
Anybody else? Well, we have a motion and a second to continue the item. Yes. What's that?
Can I just ask the maker of the motion, how long are you hoping to continue it for?
I would like to get more clarity on how actually these obligations will be fulfilled, because this book is literally being written as we're discussing it. And I think the principle here for me is, you know, I look at what the fee would be. At $130,000 per unit, this would be subsidizing, you know, fewer than 10 additional units. So I'm concerned about what the yield is of affordable housing at the end. I'd like to at least understand that and make an informed decision on that. So if a month will be enough for the Housing Commission to work out the particulars of how this might be implemented, I'd be more comfortable. I just feel like this is the first. I'd like to understand what the yield is, because this is a new process. So I'm not sure if that's an answer to your question. I don't know if a month is sufficient for staff.
We'll do our best to get further clarification and try and drill down on the numbers and everything, if that's what the board needs before they can make a decision.
Well, I guess for me, without voting, I'm inclined to support the motion, but I would like to give the developer some certainty of when it might come back. I realize it's contingent on conversations with the Housing Commission, but I think if we could maybe put a time on it.
I certainly don't envision more than a 30-day as the seconder of the motion. If we can't get an answer in 30 days, I don't think there's a good answer. So that'll be a awkward next meeting. I would suggest perhaps we bring someone from the Housing Commission down. I know we defer a lot to them because they're the keeper of these laws. So since we're getting into really kind of a complicated calculation, maybe we need them. So I would suggest staff perhaps invite them to answer some of these questions too and make sure that we're actually following. I certainly don't distrust what our staff is saying, but it is complicated and confusing, and I'm not sure what the trade-offs have been either. And that's something I want to fully understand. So maybe invite the Housing Commission as well.
I would accept that. I mean, it's not really a part of the motion, but I think coming back in 30 days, we could do that.
We do need to continue it to a date certain so we can avoid having to renotice the future hearing.
I'd just recommend you direct us to bring it back at the next regular meeting. And to the extent there's an issue with that, then we'll have another continuance at that time.
That'd be great. Thank you.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor and a second. Please vote on that.
The motion passes with Directors Geisler and Avila voting no.
Thank you. concludes our regular meeting. We're going to take a break for 5 minutes, and then we'll go into closed session.
Before we go into closed session, I think there's at least two abstentions that will occur with regard to closed session item 9C, which is the Hilltop and Euclid matter. I believe Directors Rath and Directors Russell will be abstaining based upon their previous disclosed reasons for abstaining on this matter.
Okay.